You may have noticed that we periodically dive into the world of comics and culture, and the culture around them here on the show. And Joel Christian Gill has been our guide through that journey. He is the inaugural chair of the Boston University MFA program in visual narrative. He's back here in Studio 2 for another edition of Comic Culture Today. Welcome back, Joel.
Thanks for having me.
And you brought a friend. Oh, by the way, full disclosure, BU holds WBUR's broadcast license. You brought a friend along with you, and that is John Jennings, who is an author, graphic novelist, professor of media and cultural studies at the University of California in Riverside. John, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Well, especially knowing that it's 3 hours behind there. I appreciate you making the effort to join us.
We don't have to mention that.
All right, I want to start. So what we are going to focus on here is Black superheroes and the Black comic creators of today.
Yes.
And so I want to start, Joel, with you, and I just want to ask you, who's your favorite Black superhero?
Hardware.
Who is Hardware and why?
So Hardware is like the anti-Iron Man, right? He's a Black superhero created by Milestone Media in the early part of the 90s. Hardware is this like Black genius level kid who is taken in by like, I guess the best description is like an Elon Musk type character. He takes him in. He's like, I'm going to take care of you and everything's going to be fine. And he finds out that the guy's corrupt and he goes to him and he's like, we got to fix this. He goes, oh, you misunderstand your place. You're the help. So he builds a suit and in the basement of like one of his towers and he fights his corruption from the basement. So like where you have most of the superheroes who are billionaires, and you've heard me talk about how much I think Batman is a terrible superhero.
Yes, I am.
And John has heard me talk about this too. I could like talk up 10 minutes on this. But, you know, like Hardware, Curtis Metcalf is a fantastic counterbalance to that. Like he uses his intellect and the money and the resources that he has to fight corruption as opposed to beat up poor people.
All right. So first, why do we not have a movie on that?
Right. Yeah. You know why.
Yeah. I do. And we'll talk about that. And John, how about you? Who's your favorite Black superhero?
You know, honestly, I might have to say my own that I just created for Marvel.
Ghost Light.
Ghost Light. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So no, but that don't be sorry. That's really cool. You just got to make one.
Right.
That's right.
So tell us about that.
Well, here's the thing. So the main character's name is Dr. Albie Harper. He appears in Silver Surfer number 5 in like 1969. I won't go through too much of the plot, but essentially he ends up having to sacrifice his life to save the world. You know, that's the stakes. And the whole issue is about like civil rights and, you know, oppressed people and that kind of thing. I mean, Stan Lee was having a conversation around race in this particular issue. The character, you know, sacrifices himself. The Silver Surfer is moved by this and he puts a cosmic powered flame on his grave to mark him as a hero until the end of the earth, you know, to the end of time. So, you know, I was working on this book with my friend Angelique Roche, called My Superhero is Black, which is a guide to Marvel's characters from 1950 to the current day. And I saw this character and I was like, why is he dead? I was like, he has like, there's a cosmic flame like on his chest. Like this, you know, the Fantastic Four got their powers from cosmic rays. Couldn't we resurrect them? And so, you know, Marvel wanted to see a pitch. So I sent it over and they greenlit it and gave me a 5-issue series. And so what I've done is resurrected the character as a cosmic powered superhero.
It's so dope. It's so dope. Like I can't just say enough about it. It's such a great story. I am like super excited about where it's gonna go. And like I was, you know, like we talked about this before. This is what I told Tiziana, but we talked, John, that we could probably just talk for 2 hours. Like we don't necessarily need a TV show. I mean, yeah.
Good, because we don't have one right here.
We don't need to be on the radio. But like the idea of creating, you know, taking a character that's already sort of embedded in the history and flipping that, you know, like the Black characters always died, right? Like we always have to sacrifice for the greater good. And it's kind of like, and now you've taken that and you turn it on its head, right? No longer you're not sacrificing, you're going to be the hero. You're going to be the main, you're not going to be the side character. You're going to be the main attraction, which I think is incredible because we don't get that often. We're starting to get it more. You know, like when I was remember watching Black Panther and the right. when what's the white character who played in the Lord of the Rings when he was like about I just knew that they were going to kill him as like an homage to like the sidekick being killed, but they didn't. But
Martin Freeman played the Hobbit.
Yeah. And so like when he
but also CIA.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I was like, I thought he was going to die, but he didn't. But, you know, it would have been interesting if that would have been the case, because that's what black characters typically do. Right. We show up as the trope, as the magical Negro. Like we help. We are helping the other person. We are the exotic other, using our magic exoticness to help them. And in this situation, that's not the case, right? And I think that's why it's so dope.
Well, I appreciate that. And one of the inspirations too was, you know, doing research on this character during like the George Floyd protests. This is before we lost Chadwick Boseman to cancer. I had just lost my sister to a heart attack, so there was a lot of black death around me. You know. And so even though this character is like not real, I was like, can he not be in the ground anymore? You know what I'm saying? And so
by God, can you bring somebody back to life?
Exactly. Even if it's not a real person. And so symbolically, and give him a backstory, because in the original story, you know, he was a plot point. I mean, he was created to die. I mean, the name of the story and is the original story is called And Who Shall Mourn for Him? Right. And so Stan Lee is actually asking us, like, if this black man sacrifices himself for the world, would you care? You know? And so, yeah, and I gave him, so the first part of the story is kind of answering that question, you know, but it's been exciting. Now, besides Ghostlight, I also really love Mr. Terrific.
So who's Mr. Terrific?
Is this character he's what they call a legacy character. Mr. Terrific was a character, well, from like 1940s or so, I believe, and kind of a hokey character. I mean, he was, you know, he had the term like fair play, like plastered on his chest, and, you know, was kind of like non-power character. What they did for the Justice Society of America is they essentially made this character a super genius. And like Joe was saying, I mean, a lot of times there's these stereotypes around black characters. For instance, you know, the black male characters are really about embodiment and physical power. You know, here we have a character that has like, what, 13 or 14 PhDs in different areas of study. Right. And so he has the physicality of like an athlete, but for the most part, he's like one of the smartest characters.
He's got a superhero brain.
Exactly. The other thing, too, is that he has this tech on his face. It's kind of like nanotech that makes him invisible to surveillance. And so he's literally the invisible man. It's so smart. I love him.
So we're speaking with John Jennings, who's out in California. He's a graphic novelist and professor of media and cultural studies at the University of California at Riverside. And here in the studio, Joel Christian Gill, our regular guide through the world of comics and comic culture and the inaugural chair of the Boston University MFA program in visual narrative. Okay, so I want to go back for a second.
Okay.
So, Joel, at the beginning of the conversation, you talk about Hardware, this superhero that you love from the 1990s. And I say, why isn't that a movie? And you're like, duh, you know why it's not a movie. But then we talk about the fact that John Jennings just got to literally Lazarus an old comic book character,
right,
and create a new black superhero out of it. So are we at a point where it is possible to tell stories? I mean, yes, we are at a point where telling stories that we weren't telling before, but what else is possible now?
What else is possible now is like taking, you know, I hate to be nihilistic in that idea, like Derek Bell and the faces at the bottom of the well, like that idea that we are never going to get anywhere. But if we could take this momentum and start using it to tell these stories, like one of my favorite things about when Black Panther came out is like seeing little white kids like running around Walmart in the Black Panther mask, right? Like, why can't our heroes, who are universal, right? Like, let me rephrase that. Curtis Metcalf as Hardware is much more of an everyman whose ideas that we would all agree with. He's fighting corruption, right? Batman as a billionaire could solve one problem in Gotham with all of his money, and he takes that money and he uses it for research and development to beat up poor people, right? So if you take those ideologies, we want to either fight corruption, an evil corporation, or we want to be an evil corporation beating up poor people. I think everybody can get behind the other one. The problem is that race is so embedded in America that people don't typically want to see themselves in this black man. And I think that's part of the problem.
And do you think, John, well, let me not even ask a question. Let me ask you what the was about, John.
Well, I was thinking about that because, you know, one of the things that attracted me to Al B. Harper, for instance, was, again, Stan Lee was trying to make a statement about the state of America and race, right? This is 1969, a year after Dr. King was assassinated. And one of the things I typically do when I'm doing research on these older comics is I look at the letters pages, you know, like people would write into the comic and whatever. So I was looking at the responses to this particular story, and you had people who were writing in who did not like the fact that they were making this statement about the Silver Surfer being an analog for Black people, you know, because that's an obvious part of the story in this particular case. And so what Joe's saying, I think, is absolutely true. Like, do you see yourself being able to be saved by, you know, a Black man or a Black woman, or a Black person, right? Who is your hero? You know, that kind of thing. And what does a hero look like? You know, these are very interesting ideas. There's a friend of ours named Jabari Hassim who teaches at Emerson, actually, and he wrote.
We've had him on the show a number of times.
Oh, I bet. Love Jabari. He wrote this book called What Obama Means, and one of the chapters deals with the fact that one of the things that probably led up to Obama being actually, like, you know, elected is the fact that we started to see Black presidents in media, or we started to see leading men, and so it starts to change the narrative around, like, how we see Blackness as being positive or intelligent or powerful. You know what I'm saying? And so these media representations are extremely important.
So line between Dennis Haysbert as the first Black president in 24, which comes out in like 2002, to us having a different imagination about who a president is.
Right. And you have characters like, for instance, you know, Morgan Freeman from like Deep Impact and things of that nature too, right? So and then of course it's leading men like, you know, Denzel Washington and Samuel Jackson and all. Is when we start to see, you know, people of color start to become leads in these spaces, we start to kind of change the narrative. And that's why it's like media representation is so important. On the opposite side, you have what they call symbolic annihilation, which is the total erasure of what you would call the, you know, the deemed other, right? Where and so in some ways, through symbolic annihilation, you're literally killing someone's image and basically denying them a positive representation of himself, which studies show can actually undermine your very self-esteem.
And I think what's interesting, John, I think you touched on this and we've talked about this before, is that idea of how things become like popular culture. You know, it struck me, and something that stuck with me a long time is when we were talking about horror movies, and I was talking about when me, you, and Steve Bissett were talking about that idea of, like, I can't really get into that because the scariness doesn't really bother me. And you and Steve both, Steve Bissett, who was a cartoonist in Vermont, and legendary cartoonist, you and him both told me, like, these things are metaphors for other things that are happening in the world. So, like, kaiju in those giant monster movies are basically the Japanese people's reaction to this total devastation, right? And then
post-World War II.
Yeah, post-World War II. And, like how if you look at, you know, like Get Out, and how Get Out is like the angst of being a Black man, right? Like what that looks like in America from a horror perspective. Or when you talked about Kindred as being this idea of like looking at that from a horror perspective and looking at these things that exist in the cultural zeitgeist, right? You know, we talk about this, Dr. Kendi talks about this in Stand from the Beginning, like once we get Jack Johnson, we have to have King Kong. And once we get the Civil Rights Movement, we have Planet of the Apes. So we have this cultural understanding, this thing that like exists in the ether where we all are experiencing this thing. And it doesn't mean that we're necessarily thinking if we have this Black thing, we got to have this opposing, like it's not necessarily that idea. It's just like there's a feeling that we get. And I don't know, like this is probably more spiritual than we want to get into, but there's definitely this idea that when things are terrible, we are feeling things in popular culture, those things exist in our entertainment too. After the 2016 election, we got all of those movies about holding still and being quiet that were horror movies, right?
Oh my God.
Right. We got, right. It's like, that's the thing that like those things seep out. And it's like, when you can connect to those things, like a Black president on television that you can root for, then you can see a Black president, right? When you see those things in reality, you can. I mean, the Ukraine elected a comedian as a president, right? And it was because they saw him as some, you know, like it was popular culture, right?
Well, and he had played a president.
And he had played a president too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I want to, and we're talking with Joel Christian Gill and John Jennings here, you know, as we journey through the world of comics. We're talking about Black superheroes, Black comic makers. It makes me want to ask John Jennings, What do we want from our superheroes? Why do we have them? And what do we want from them?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the superhero, you know, technically the first comic book superhero is Superman, right? Created in 1938 by Siegel and Shuster.
We'll check. I think it is 38, but we'll check.
Yes, I think it's 1938. So the superhero is an idiom of power. You know, if you think about what starts to happen in that particular era, you have like an influx of immigrants coming to like larger cities. I mean, for a long time, the comic book industry as we knew it was generated out of New York City. And imagine like, you know, what was happening was like you have an influx of people, there's a lot of joblessness and, you know, less
depression. Oh, it's 1933, by the way.
Yeah. So, oh, it's 1933?
That's what we found, but we'll keep looking.
Is it that early? I thought it was 38. But anyway, never mind.
It's the 30s.
It's the 30s, exactly. Right. So what starts to happen then is, you know, there's an intense amount of crime. And I forget which of the creators actually lost their father to, you know, to crime. He was mugged and he died of a heart attack. And one of the reasons why they created Superman was, man, if I had the power to fight back, right?
Okay.
Now, something that Joel says is like very interesting too. Is like, you know, the superhero at the base of it is saying that society, the government that we've created, the police that we kind of like put our faith in, are not enough, right? And so this is it's a really interesting, you know, kind of problematic notion.
It's very like Batman is Nixon's Law and Order, right?
Right. He's very much an autocrat, right?
Yeah.
He's like this powerful autocrat. So, well, yeah, but I think what it is that at the end of the day, like the superhero is supposed to be there to protect us, someone who is there to look out for us. And, you know, Superman, for instance, is like supposed to be your best friend with superpowers, right? That's kind of like how you look at him. He's there when you need him kind of thing, you know, when you can't depend on anyone else. That's the idea, at least. So, I think we've always done that. We've embodied like notions of power and, I mean, they're modern day mythology, and you know. And
I think John, what you do though, I think John, what you do with your stories is you don't make superpower cops, right? And I don't think, because we don't need superpowered cops. I think what we need is people who are actually protecting us from people like cops, right? Yes. And I think you have in all of your career and all of the superheroes, we could talk about this for an hour. All of the superheroes you created are embodiments of the idea that we are actually going to protect people. We're not going to subjugate or just basically focus on poor people, right?
Well, so the other thing that's in our minute left here, Joel, the other thing about that is now moving into a space where a broader America can embrace a black man or a black superhero as that protector.
Exactly. Yes. Absolutely. And that's what I want. Like, you know, like I say, I'm like a little bit nihilistic about this and cynical, but I really want that to be the case, right? I want them to look at, you know, Ghost Light as like a person that we can all sort of look up to, right? Mm-hmm. I want people to look at, you know, Bruce Wayne writing a check versus Curtis Metcalf fighting, you know, like corruption and saying, you know, we want Curtis Metcalf. We don't need the other guys. We don't need the billionaires. We got billionaires who are not using their money for good, right? Let's get some people who are actually doing it.
All right. On that, I think we'll end there because if not,
It's
going to be like 3 hours. Joel Christian Gill is the inaugural chair of the Boston University MFA program in visual narrative. We've also been speaking with John Jennings, the creator of Silver Surfer, Ghost Light, from Marvel, and a professor of media and cultural studies at the University of California at Riverside. I want to thank both of you for today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for having me.